It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead, you betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner, PJ Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Branch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your very next order. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show at LOCKEDON Rockets, and also the blog, of course, at ClutchCityCR. So for today's show, as promised, we are going to dive into PJ Tucker's season, talk about some strengths, weaknesses, that kind of thing, as previously promised. Now, I will say I'm terribly sorry. I had dental surgery, just a dental appointment, I guess, but it was like a four-hour dental appointment, like Thursday afternoon. I was decommissioned for like all of Thursday night and then well into Friday, canceled plans, all sorts of stuff. That had me out, so I missed Friday's episode, unfortunately. But we're back, we're here, it's Monday, it's the start of a new week, and regrettably, there's also still no news about the Rockets' head coaching vacancy. And I am bewildered at this point, and it is really concerning that they haven't gone ahead and made a move since they've had their final three candidates in Jeff Van Gundy, Steven Silas, and in-house candidate John Lucas for some time now. And it's concerning because the Rockets are this franchise that's kind of at a crossroads right now of their own destiny, where they have to figure out exactly where the franchise goes from this point forward. Do they consider, moving away from small ball, for a full 48 minutes? Do they bring in a big? Do they bring in a stretch big? Is Russell Westbrook on the trading block? Is James Harden on the trading block? There's a lot going on, and there's going to be a very, very, very short period of time for them to accomplish overhauling this roster, because as John Hollinger pointed out in The Athletic, the NBA, and as Shams Charania reported on it for The Athletic, the NBA is looking at targeting a December 22nd start date. Because starting in December and seizing all of that Christmas Day viewership audience would really help financially for the league. And the money is always the biggest tell of what the league is going to do. And if the NBA really wants to secure that December-based revenue, then that December 22nd start date makes the most sense, which would then lead for a kind of a domino effect of how the rest of the offseason is going to look. Which means right now it would be free agency beginning on November 23rd, so about 5 days after the NBA draft, which is on November 18th, and just before Thanksgiving, which is much earlier than the originally speculated December 1st free agency start date, which would mean if the league is trying to get back in action by December 22nd, that means that there's about like a week to 10 days for a free agency period before training camp begins, which is wild to think about. So that means you would have this blitz, right, where there would be free agency happening, all this offseason madness. You've got your draftees getting indoctrinated into their organizations. You've got the free agents being brought in. And then suddenly it's just, all right, we're throwing all of you into training camp. Let's go. That's going to be amazing if the NBA is able to pull it off. But the scary thing is, again, the Rockets have a rookie general manager in Raphael Stone and still haven't signed a head coach. And I believe it was Bema Thug on Twitter who pointed it out that if the Rockets are looking to hire a coach in the vicinity of, say, the $2.5 million range per year for his contract, that every week that the Rockets don't have a head coach, they save a little over $40,000. He broke down the math. I believe that was the math that he broke down. And it So, if money's the reason, then maybe that. Maybe the head coaches have kind of become a little bit more skeptical about the Houston Rockets situation with Daryl Morey's departure. However, based on everything that we know so far to this point, Daryl has been a big part of the interview process, will continue to be a big part of the interview process until November 1st. And was very open with the candidates about the fact that he was planning on leaving the organization. So it's not like this was Daryl interviewing these candidates on the sly, trying to get somebody on the hook with a contract, and then be like, aha, I got you, now I'm out the door. It wasn't like that at all. So there's some type of extenuating circumstance as to why the Rockets haven't signed a new head coach, and I personally cannot wrap my head around why that is, unless it's just money-centric, right? Or maybe they're arguing over benefits or something. I genuinely don't know at this point. The secondary interviews have been conducted with both Jeff Van Gundy and Stephen Silas. One would imagine that John Lucas probably also has spent some extra time, you know, kind of campaigning for himself in-house, you know, amongst the players. He was there. He was the pick by James Harden and Russell Westbrook, supposedly. So maybe there's some internal strife going on there amongst the star players who would like X coach to be selected, whereas the organization, you know, Tillman Fertitta, Stone, want to go in the direction of, you know, potentially Jeff Van Gundy or Stephen Silas, whereas, again, James Harden and Russell Westbrook are pulling for John Lucas. I don't know. We haven't been getting that many reports, so it's kind of like we're just, again, we're in this holding pattern of just waiting for that to happen, because that is the first domino that has to fall before the Rockets can make any other organizational changes about how they're going to approach this upcoming 2020-2021 season. So as promised, that's just our update right there regarding the Rockets, regarding the NBA at large. It's going to definitely be extremely interesting moving forward, especially if they really try to hammer out that December 21st NBA start date. So with that, let's go ahead. We are going to get into PJ Tucker and talking about his previous season and, you know, just kind of where he's at, what he means to this Rockets team, all of that. And we'll get there in just one moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Look, these protein bars have become such a great part of my daily life that I want you to be able to check them out too. They've got so many amazing flavors, 18 to be specific. They've got their 12 like OG flavors and 6 newer flavors that they've recently added to the menu. So some of the newer ones, right? Cookies and cream, carrot cake, apple almond crisps, some of the original ones. You've got salted caramel, my favorite, the double chocolate mousse, banana bread. Just really, you can't go wrong with any of these flavors on their menu. And I mean, the thing is, right? These protein bars, they're not like regular protein bars. They're not chalky or gritty or anything. They're delicious. They're basically a candy bar that's jam-packed with protein. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They're great for the health-conscious person. They're low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Amazing for a keto diet, especially if you're just, whether you're trying to lose weight or even just maintain, you know, where you're at, these bars are for you. And you can check them out. Just go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code Locked On and you'll get 20% off your very next order. So again, that's promo code Locked On for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. And we're back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. If you'd like to call into the show, 713-487-5457. That's the call-in line. You can drop us a line, drop us a message. I'll either play it back on the show or listen to it and then just address whatever topic it may be directly in the show. I think it's just a really awesome, fun way for you to be able to interact with me, to kind of reach out again, and there's other ways to reach out, whether you want to DM through Twitter, through my Instagram, through the Facebook page, drop a review and then leave a question there, all that kind of stuff. I just wanted to give as many possible ways to interact with the show because that's my favorite thing, is being able to interact with you, our listeners. So with that, let's get into some of PJ Tucker. Now, Tucker is legitimately, he is the heart and soul of this Rockets team and has been ever since Patrick Beverley left. Like, just you go back and James Harden has never been necessarily the heart and soul of this Rockets team, and that's okay. The franchise player doesn't have to also take on that role within the organization, but Patrick Beverley was that guy for a number of years, and then it was just a very clean switch from dealing Pat Bev you know, bringing in Chris Paul in that big trade package, but then also signing PJ Tucker subsequently that offseason. And then PJ kind of grew into that role over the course of that first season, the 17-18 campaign. And then by the time he was injected into the starting lineup with the Ryan Anderson injury, he basically took over that role and has been the heart and soul of this Rockets team. He is the defensive anchor of this Rockets team. There is no amount of good things, or no limit to the good things that I could say about PJ Tucker and his presence on this Rockets team. And I think it's very clear that when you think about what PJ Tucker's strengths are, where he succeeds on the basketball court, it boils down to two things. He is a top-notch defender, arguably an all-NBA defender that doesn't really get the recognition that he deserves. And unfortunately, I don't think he ever will, unfortunately, because he's at this point in his career where a bit long in the tooth, there's not many chances left for him to make an all-NBA defensive team splash as far as, career accolades are concerned. So unfortunately, that's probably not in the cards for him, but I do think he is an all-NBA caliber defender. And then he's an elite three-point shooter, especially from the corners. Led the NBA again this past season in corner three-point shooting and corner three-point percentage. So, and lastly, he's a hustle guy, right? He is a guy who makes winning basketball plays, right? At the end of a close game, right, he'll get you that winning rebound. He'll get you the offensive board. He'll be the one first guy, body on the floor, scrambling for a loose ball if it's near him to try and get you one more possession. He is the type of player that you want on a championship caliber team because he makes winning basketball plays. You can never have enough of those types of guys on your team. Ideally, I would love to see PJ Tucker retire a Rocket. And I think that when Daryl Morey was the general manager, I think that was absolutely in the cards, and that both parties would find an extension deal that works for the two of them, probably something along the lines of a 3-year, $30 million, somewhere around there. PJ gets a slight pay raise, but the problem is he's not going to get a payday like Trevor Ariza got a payday, right? Trevor dipped and was making, what, $7, $8 million here in Houston, and then dipped and went and got a 2-year, $15 million deal. That's not going to happen for PJ Tucker, I don't think. Like, legitimately, there's going to be some other contenders out there that would like to throw money at PJ Tucker, but you could argue maybe he's worth the full non-taxpayer MLE, but nobody's going to throw legitimate cap room at PJ Tucker. So I think his best bet is like around, again, a 3-year, $30 million deal to stay in Houston. He gets a slight bump up to $10 million a year from his current, like, about $8 million a year contract. And then he gets to retire a Rocket. He gets to continue playing alongside James, assuming James, you know, spends the rest of his career here in Houston. God willing, please let that happen. Even entertaining the idea of a James Harden trade is not something I'd like to stomach at this point in time. So, and then, you know, again, PJ Tucker, I think this, when you look at this past season especially and where the role that he was forced into, and I do say forced into, in playing small ball for an entire 48 minutes, he succeeded at it, yes, but I do think that there's concern there and the longevity of him to be able to do that over the course of an entire NBA season, which I forgot to mention this in the first segment, but looking at the supposed December 22nd start date, the NBA is targeting a 72-game regular season. And that 72-game regular season is because it would satisfy all the contract obligations for all the regional TV networks, very similarly to the decision to do 8 seeding games before jumping into the playoffs, because 8 seeding games would carry all the teams to at least that 72-game mark this past season to be able to satisfy the broadcasting rights, which is something that Craig Ackerman mentioned when he was on this podcast just before the NBA restart, talking about some of the broadcasting agreements and arrangements going on to satisfy the requirements, the contractual requirements between both parties, the NBA and the regional broadcasters, and that 72-game mark is the sweet spot. So, but again, thinking about PJ Tucker having to play a modified 72-game season as the starting center for the Houston Rockets does not bode well. I don't think that's something that is a recipe for success, unfortunately, because again, small ball is a very taxing style. It is exhausting for all 5 players on the court to have to be at their best at all times, because you have to rebound as a team, you have to defend as a team. There is no defensive anchor to try and cover you if you blow a, you know, if somebody If you blow a defensive coverage or if you let somebody drive right by you on the perimeter, whatever it may be, I don't think that is the way to get through the regular season. So kind of, I kind of digress a little bit there, and I will get to more of that out because I do want to hammer something out in the final segment talking about some opportunities for PJ Tucker. But I think that his weaknesses, the areas that, and I don't know, again, for a guy that at this point in his career, I don't know if there's a way for these weaknesses to be improved upon. I do think that maybe some of it is a causality of the system that he's been placed in and the system that the Rockets have run for the last 3 years, essentially. But he's very limited offensively, and his handling and his playmaking abilities are, you know, almost non-existent. I mean, it's very tough to gauge, mainly because we don't ever get to see them on display for PJ Tucker. But legitimately, you know, if he's not shooting a corner three-point shot, then there's not much else that PJ Tucker is doing offensively, unfortunately. He does set very strong screens, and I will give him that, that when he's setting a screen, when they're executing their little dribble handoff on the perimeter, PJ Tucker setting a screen is like running into a brick wall. So it would be nice to be able to see him be a little bit more effective in the offense and setting screens at the top of the key and maybe, you know, being that kind of pick and pop threat. And that's something that I want to talk about here in just a moment. And we'll get there because I want to talk about his opportunities and the threats to PJ Tucker, because again, this is that SWOT analysis that I've been talking about. We did strengths and weaknesses. We've got opportunities and threats coming up here in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for all things Houston Rockets basketball. Continuing to talk about PJ Tucker and his role on this Rockets team. Now, I kind of alluded to it just a moment ago, but talking about PJ Tucker and just looking at opportunities for him, right, to be a better player in this organization, to have a chance to succeed even more so than he has to this point. I think that anybody who's watched PJ Tucker play with any regularity can point out the fact that he is a hesitant shooter at times, almost borderline playing as a non-shooter in certain situations. And the situations that I'm talking about are any time that he is handling the ball outside of one of the two corners that he's usually parked in, he doesn't even look to shoot the ball sometimes. And it's gotten so bad this past season that defenses are realizing this and sagging off of PJ Tucker. They're treating him at times as a non-shooter. I cannot count the number of times that PJ Tucker was holding the ball at the top of the key, top of the arc, and the opposing center was all the way down at the free throw line, just surveying, just waiting to see where PJ Tucker was going to pass the ball, and PJ's not even looking to shoot. Now, I'm sorry, I get that the corner is your sweet spot, but an NBA three-point shooter, somebody who is, you know, a prototypical 3-and-D guy, which PJ Tucker is, should be able to keep a defense honest from anywhere around the three-point line, not exclusively the corners. And I remember, you know, earlier on in his Rockets career, PJ did take some of those top-of-the-key shots. He took some shots from the slot, you know, and obviously he focused on the corners because that's usually where he found himself during most of the Rockets, you know, designated plays and their designated sets. But, it, you know, there are still plenty of times where he starts the play at the top of the key where you know, he's initiating the pass to James Harden or to Russ over on the wing. And if he's got an open three-point shot, there is no reason for him to not take that shot at the top of the key. And, again, that would keep defenses open. It would keep opposing centers who usually, unless there's a weird scenario like, you know, when Rudy Gobert guarded Russ or when Anthony Davis was guarding Russ in the playoffs, unless there's a situation like that where the opposing five is guarding Russ because the other defense is getting cheeky, then for the most part, opposing centers are the ones guarding PJ Tucker. And so if he can keep them a bit more honest by dragging them, you know, the next, you know, 3 to 4 feet further out to the three-point line, it's going to clear things up in the paint, right? It's going to clear things up for the Rockets to be able to have some of that off-ball action, maybe have some cutters, you know, cutting in towards the rim rather than just all that stagnation taking place on the three-point line. Yeah, there's, you know, with MDA, there were some flare screens off on the sides and stuff, but for the most part, there was never any motion towards the actual basket to try and get easy points at the rim. You know, for the most part, the Rockets' points at the rim tend to come from drives by either James Harden or Russell Westbrook. So looking at PJ Tucker as a whole, yes, he's an elite corner three-point shooter. Yes, he's an elite defender. But where he can certifiably improve is just overall his shooting hesitancy and actually being willing to shoot the ball from, you know, roughly the other, you know, what is it, 60% of the three-point line that he's not willing to shoot from right now, the wings and then the top of the key. I don't think that's asking too much from an NBA-level three-point shooter like PJ Tucker to at least be willing to shoot the ball from those areas. Because like I said, PJ Tucker sets a hell of a screen. And there's no reason why PJ Tucker couldn't set a screen for James Harden, right? Set a really strong, basically brick wall-like screen for James Harden and then just drift off to the side, very similarly to what Robert Covington does. Because you see this play with Robert Covington quite often and James Harden, where Covington sets the screen, or even Ben McLemore does this at times, where they set the screen for Harden, and then as the two defenders are shading James Harden, James does the little wraparound pass, you know, behind the back, one bounce pass dribble, or sorry, one, not one bounce pass dribble, but the one bounce off to the shooter, who is lined up roughly around the top of the key or kind of off on the wing a little bit, just kind of depends on how far they float away from the strong side action. But that's very easy for PJ Tucker to do as well. And if anything, it might be even easier because, again, PJ sets a better screen than Ben McLemore and Robert Covington combined. Because, again, it's like getting screened by a damn brick wall. So I think that's an interesting element for PJ Tucker's game and definitely something that we saw him struggle and saw a few other Rockets struggle with in the Lakers series. But shooting hesitancy kills the Rockets' offense. Right, they averaged, you know, around 33 point attempts per game in the Lakers series, whereas they were averaging almost 55 attempts per game in the 8 seeding games prior. So the Lakers took the Rockets out of what they wanted to do, but part of that is the players themselves not playing like themselves, not playing their usual brand of basketball, and that boils back down to shooting hesitancy. Now, this is something that I spoke about already a little bit, and it's just kind of one of those underlying things that you understand with a veteran team that. But PJ Tucker, you know, long in the tooth, 35 years old, the concern moving forward for him has to be his age, right? And his and how much does he really legitimately have left in the tank? And I think that this kind of can be bundled into an opportunity type thing for him. But if the Rockets are afforded a center without giving up one of Daniel House or Robert Covington, I think there needs to be a legitimate discussion as to whether PJ Tucker should come off the bench. Now, we're in the threat portion of PJ Tucker's analysis, but I do think this is semi-bundled into the opportunities area. But I do think a threat, right, to PJ Tucker is his age. The fact that he is, you know, he shouldn't be playing 36 minutes a night. He shouldn't be, you know, his minutes should not be anywhere near as high as they are. And there's data to suggest that PJ Tucker is a better three-point shooter when he has more rest. One of the contributors for Clutch City Control Room, Sean, did a great analysis looking at, you know, when the Rockets are rested, specifically when PJ Tucker is rested, does he shoot the ball better? And he does. And I remember looking back at around the All-Star break, trying to get a feel for what's going on with PJ Tucker's shot. He's in a bit of a slump. And I remember doing some of the research back then that yes, when PJ Tucker gets adequate rest, he is a better three-point shooter on 2 and 3 days rest versus, you know, back-to-back games or, you know, looking at games where he's played a significant number of minutes leading into the next night or specifically like the tail end of those games where he's played a high amount of minutes. And it's something that we see on a larger scale for the Rockets team as a whole, because again, when you're playing small ball, when you're having to fight and scrap for every loose ball, every rebound, it's exhausting. And what goes first? When you're tired, your legs go first, which causes your defense to falter a little bit and also causes your three-point shooting to struggle, which is why we see the Rockets so many times over this past season and even in years prior where at the end of a game, their three-point shot just isn't there. Because for the first three quarters, that may be fine, you know, dropping those long-range bombs. But as things get to the nitty-gritty at the tail end of a game, your legs are dead tired. It's a lot easier to hit like a 10 to 15-foot jumper than it is to hit a 23, 24-foot three-point shot. So, but circling back to Tucker, I think there has to be a legitimate conversation if they bring in a center who is at least a starting caliber center in, you know, for at least even 15 to 20 minutes a night. We're talking like, you know, dollar store market centers, you know, a Nerlens Noel type, something like that, right? Just a poor man's Clint Capella, somebody who can come in and be a rim running big or a spaced out, you know, a five out spacing big, you know, just, but it doesn't have to be somebody who's going to command, you know, 30 to 35 minutes a night, just somebody who can kind of spot fill those minutes. I think there's a legitimate discussion to be had that PJ Tucker should be moved to the bench to preserve him, right? Because he's 35 years old. The Rockets want him to be as effective as possible throughout the remainder of his tenure here in Houston. And to do that, you have to limit his minutes. And you're not going to be able to do that if you have to rely on him for 35 minutes plus at the center position, banging against other, you know, 6'11", 7 foot, 250 plus pound guys every single night of a condensed NBA season where there's bound to be an increased number of back-to-backs where there's going to be less 3 days rest between games, things like that. You have to get a move to the bench. Now, if they do have to give up, you know, Robert Covington or Daniel House or, you know, some combination thereof of guys to get a legitimate starting caliber center, then yeah, you keep PJ Tucker in the starting lineup. But I think that the idea of PJ Tucker being rolled out as the Rockets starting 2020-2021 center is not the way to go. And I've been firmly in this camp for some time now, basically since the end of the playoffs, that yes, small ball was the best move for the short term, and it was the best move to upgrade from Clint Capella, who there's a bunch of other, you know, cheap quality centers who can do or replicate, give you at least some of what Clint Capella does, but there's not a lot of, you know, really prime 3-and-D guys that give you what Robert Covington does. So it made sense to make that trade, even from, you know, within the short term as well as the long term, because it was maximizing Russell Westbrook at the same time. So now it's up to the Rockets to go out and find that unicorn, to find that ideally a candidate who can do both, right? Ideally, the top target should be a candidate who can both space the floor from the three-point line and then also be a rim-running big to give some vertical spacing, some of what we have missed with the absence of Clint Capella. But all of that circles back to PJ Tucker coming off the bench makes the most sense. And that's where I'm going to wrap things up for as far as talking about, you know, what needs to happen moving forward for him and his longevity as a Houston Rocket. So for today's episode, that's going to be where we wrap things up. As always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.